the issue of homelessness. Now, 30 countries have joined the coalition against the terrorist group that calls itself Islamic State. And at today's summit in Paris, hosted by the French and Iraqi governments, there have been lots of strong words about using any means necessary and having a global response to tackle the threat of IS. Now, this may be the common purpose of all those 30 countries, but regional powers like Turkey, Iran and Saudi Arabia all have different local agendas, as I've been hearing from Borzu Daragahi, Middle East and North Africa correspondent for the Financial Times.
Well, I think that's one of the most complex sort of aspects of this whole campaign, as Barack Obama calls it, against this group, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIS, that many of the players have rather contradictory goals other than to see this group crushed. And that creates a lot of divisions between the players, between Turkey, for example, and Saudi Arabia and Iran. There's a lot of mistrust and animosity. And even within the Arab states, who are supposedly allied behind this Saudi-led initiative to get involved in this fight for ISIS, there are some key differences. For example, between Saudi Arabia and Qatar, there's big disagreements, for example, on who to support in the Syrian opposition, which is a key component of this ongoing effort to contain ISIS.
So despite the very strong pledges of doing whatever it takes and, destroying this organization, how likely is it, given that Western powers are relying on the countries in the region and forces on the ground, if you like, to be the spearhead that contains and ultimately destroys Islamic State?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand myself that the whole harsh rhetoric, the kind of absolutist rhetoric. I would leave that to a London or Washington correspondent. It seems like a lot of these leaders, including Hollande in France, are promising more than they'll be able to deliver, given not only their own economic, financial limitations, given their a refusal to commit real troops on the ground, but also given the reluctance of many of these Arab states to get fully involved in this effort. It seems like they're promising more than they deliver. I bet it's for domestic political consumption more than anything.
And obviously, when we see videos such as those that were released this weekend by Islamic State of, murderous executions, it certainly does get people very concerned. They call themselves, of course, Islamic State or Islamic State in the Levant. Are they a state?
I think they aspire to be one. They have some of the attributes of a state, but one of the key attributes is being recognized by other states, and they certainly don't have that recognition. One of the reasons why they're attacking these people, they're beheading people, they're using this very harsh sectarian rhetoric, is to goad their enemies into making a misstep. And that's more the behavior of a terrorist organization than a state that hopes to be around in a few years.
And how much of what is going on there is fundamentally about a long-term tension between Sunni and Shia, one that's been played, if you like, through the breakdown of old colonial systems and old dictatorships and could last a very long time?
I mean, this whole sectarian thing, the Sunni-Shia split, started with the Iranian Revolution in 1979. So it's rather recent phenomena. It didn't really intensify. It didn't really enter the consciousness of people until 2003 with the U.S. invasion. So, I mean, there is this sort of ancient tension. There is this rivalry, but it didn't come to the forefront of politics until, big recent historical events took place. So in that sense, those who say, oh, these are just people who've been killing each other forever, you can't do anything about it, that's not exactly true. There was a long time, for example, in Iraq, where there was no sort of real palpable sense of Sunni and Shia. And these are relatively recent developments in these countries.
And that was Borzu Daragahi, Middle East and North Africa correspondent for the Financial Times.